For this morning's reading, I'm going to be reading Matthew 12, 1 through 8. At that time, Jesus went through the grain fields on the Sabbath, and his disciples became hungry and began to pick the heads of the grain and eat. But when the Pharisees saw this, they said to him, "Look, your disciples do what is not lawful to do on a Sabbath." But he said to them, "Have you not read what David did when he became hungry, he and his companions? How he entered the house of God and they ate the consecrated bread, which was not lawful for him to eat, nor for those with him, but for the priests alone? Or have you not read in the law that on the Sabbath the priests in the temple break the Sabbath and are innocent? But I say to you that something greater than the temple is here. But if you had known what this means, 'I desire compassion and not a sacrifice,' you would not have condemned the innocent. For the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath." Good line to leave up there, huh? That was a good line to leave up there.
That's amazing. Yeah. It was. Excuse me. So Friday, just after I came home from the food bank, I said, "Jim's hard of hearing, so he wants me to eat, swallow this thing." What I said was, Friday, when I came home from the food bank, I felt the ominous tickle in the back of my throat, which means, uh-oh, cold coming. I don't think I got it from the food bank. I may have picked it up on campus Tuesday. Takes a while for those things to germinate. So I'm not going to be shaking anybody's hand or giving anybody a hug, even though I'd love to do both. But I just gladly welcome you here. Wasn't that, I don't want to say an uplifting song service, but a very focusing, very soberly focusing song service. And it really was. And I think it points to the fact that it's the lyrics and not the rhythm or the beat that really touched the heart. And so I appreciate your Scott, I'm going to sit this room. It's bad. Light emitting diode. So I consulted with Jim, or Jim consulted with me. We consulted with each other, which it can be dangerous. And he wanted to know whether we should get another lapel mic. The one we were using bottomed out. And this is awkward. and I don't think I can put it in my pocket. Quack. Consultant. Yeah, you guys fight over that. I started a series, I don't know, the last month or. Hi, Ethan. We already read the scripture. So I'm probably going to be doing a bit of that. I wanted to talk this morning about the passion of Jesus. You saw it in the reading where Jesus said, where was that? Matthew. I looked it up.
And
I don't have it on my notes. That's why that was Matthew 8, wasn't it? Wait. Matthew 12, 1 through 8. Okay. And where he said, if you had known what this means, I desire compassion and not sacrifice. A lot of people think that going through life, they can do the steps of their religion and be good with God. And on that basis, we'll challenge each other when the other person doesn't do the right steps. And that's what sacrifice was, going through the right steps. And what is in the heart of God? I desire compassion rather than sacrifice. That means sacrifice is unimportant. Of course not. I mean, who was it that decreed sacrifice? Who was it that laid out the steps of sacrifice? Read the first seven chapters of Leviticus. It was God. This is how you do this sacrifice if it's for that thing. And here's, if you do this thing, then there's this sacrifice. If you do this thing and you're a priest, it's this way. If you do this thing and you're the high priest, it's this way. You do this thing and you're a leader, it's this way. If you do this thing and you're just a common person, it's this way. That was God. God did all of that. And so when Hosea comes along and says, I desire mercy and not sacrifice, what was he talking about? Wasn't he getting at the idea that people could displace their devotion to God by going through rituals? I've done the rituals, I've checked the boxes. I'm good with God. But how are you treating your fellow man? How are you treating people who disagree with you on spiritual things? How are you treating people who get caught up in lust or get caught up in homelessness or drug addiction or sex addiction? How are you treating people? Oh, they're like the unclean that walk the streets where Jesus lived, aren't they? They don't. Unclean, unclean. Don't touch them. God, our God said, I desire mercy rather than sacrifice. I want to talk about some of these things as we go forward. So, our series is, imitate Jesus. Imitate Jesus. I mean, after all, was he not the pattern of the perfect human being? Would you agree with me in that? Jesus, the pattern of the perfect human being. I would say man, but I don't mean male. I mean human. Jesus, the pattern of the perfect human. So why did God give Jesus as a pattern for of the perfect human? So dingbats like me, who get caught up in what I think is best, or get caught up in what I really want to do. Dingbats like me, who have those floods of emotion and determination and ego. I'm pretty smart. I might not be pretty, but I'm smart. But get caught up in that. Dingbats like me can have something to compare my choices with and see whether or not I made a good one. And so imitate Jesus. So I'm going to ask this question about Jesus. Would you agree that compassion is the essence of the character of Jesus? Would you agree with that?
Yes.
That of all things, compassion was what he showed. We're going to be looking into that. It's how he taught, not just what he taught, but how he taught. It's how he interacted. It's seen in as he opposed legalism. I desire mercy, not sacrifice, was his bold statement saying just doing illegal things is not what getting to what God is looking for in you. What he expects of us. What does it mean to be a disciple? What's disciple mean? Learner. Learner of what? If I'm a disciple of Jesus, what am I learning? Say again, louder.
Teacher,
But
carpenter, then he's going to learn to be a greatest carpenter.
yeah, if I'm a disciple of Jesus, what am I learning?
How to be like
How
Jesus.
to be like Jesus. How to address this situation the way he did, how to address that situation the way he did. So when I say what he expects of us, that's simply the process of being a good disciple. I'm learning. He said one where didn't he? One where say it is sufficient that the disciple be like his master. Not better than, not different than, but like. Okay? And so what he expects from us, and then what it looks like, what compassion looks like. I mean, it's a really nice word, mercy, compassion. Those words just kind of give us a really good feeling, don't they? But what does it look like? What does compassion really look like when you're interacting with people? When you see something that you think isn't right? You ever see anything that you think isn't right? All the time. There's a lot of things in this world that are goofed up and not right. And in fact, one time Jesus says, you're always going to have the poor with you. Well, that seems inequitable, doesn't it? That an imbalance in the wealth of mankind. You're always going to have them, Jesus. You're always going to have them. Well, what does it look like when I encounter them? What does compassion look like, see, at that interface? That's what we're going to be exploring. And there's going to be matters of spiritual interaction. There's going to be matters of interaction with other people. And so Jesus said in many places, I feel compassion for the people. I wish I could give you a whole list of all those places where he said that. Just trust me that that was, and I know you already do because you've already said so, that that was the essence of who he is. I feel compassion for the people. If I could close my lesson right here, that would be it. I feel compassion for the people. At whatever level they are, at whatever mess they're in, at whatever dysfunction their life might have, whatever erroneous conclusions that they're drawing about life, I feel compassion for the people. I think that can be illustrated no better than one of the seven sayings on the cross, right? Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. That was a compassion of Jesus toward the people, or that mournful cry at the end of Matthew 23. Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, who stones the prophets and kills those who are sent to her. How often I wanted to gather you to me the way a hen gathered her chicks under her wings. That's a cry of compassion. Bad things are about to happen to you, Jerusalem, and I wanted to prevent them. I wanted to protect you, but you weren't willing. I feel compassion for the people. I don't feel a righteous indignation that you're getting what you deserve. That's God's business to give people what they deserve. My business is to give people what they need and have the compassion to do so. So Jesus, I feel compassion with the people. And in some places we can read that Jesus was moved with compassion. For example, in Matthew 9 at verse 36, Jesus saw the multitudes that had gathered to him, and he said, Matthew said that Jesus felt a deep compassion for the people because they were like sheep without a shepherd. God has always known that his people need mature spiritual guidance. I mean, guidance by mature spiritual men and women. And he looked at this mass of people hungry for his words dripping out of his lips. And he knew that they weren't getting fed by the shepherds of Israel, like sheep without a shepherd. He said, in Matthew 14 and verse 14, in multitudes, and let me not get ahead of myself here. In Matthew 14 to verse 14, there's some context. Jesus heard that John the Baptist had been beheaded. Verse 13, when Jesus heard, he drew from there in a boat to a lonely place by himself. Now, who was John the Baptist? He was his cousin. They knew each other. John was 6 months older than Jesus. He was also the forerunner that Isaiah predicted in chapter 40. He was also the Elijah who was to come that Malachi mentioned in chapter 4 of Malachi. This is an important man sent from God to bring Jesus to the people, to prepare a people ready to receive Jesus. And he'd been beheaded. We think of the tragedy of the, I don't call it an assassination, I call it a martyrdom of Charlie Kirk. And just how he was shot in the neck while he was standing up for the ways of Jesus. John the Baptist got the same thing. He was standing up for the ways of God and they got his head cut off. And so when Jesus heard, he withdrew from there in a boat to a lonely place by himself. What was he doing? Maybe just trying to process everything. And when the multitudes heard, they followed him from the cities. He's gone out there. Let's go follow him. They were oblivious to the anguish of his heart, to the emptiness, not emptiness, but to the grief that he felt over the loss of this wonderful man. There's no greater man. And he's withdrawing himself to be by himself alone. But the multitudes followed him. And when, verse 14, and when he came out, he saw a great multitude and felt compassion for them and healed their sick. They're coming because they got ailments and they know he can heal. They weren't necessarily coming because he had the word of God. They were just coming because they had needs. And Jesus had this deep emotional need. And yet when he saw them, he felt compassion for them and healed them. Tim?
Back up just a second to when Jesus went to be alone. It was showing again he's 100% man, 100% God. And he felt compassion. Already the child's been God, but the flesh still hurt. And he felt that and identifies how we feel.
Yeah, good point. At the death of Lazarus, his friend Jesus was the only one crying tears. Everybody else was moaning. Jesus had tracks of tears on his cheeks. Behold how he loved him. A good point. The what I'm wanting you to see here is especially is that even in his grief, which you can identify with, he felt compassion for the people. That it wasn't a selfish thing. Compassion is not a selfish thing. It overrode his wanting to be alone because they needed him. And I wonder how that works in my life, see, or in yours. That people, you're hurting, but you see somebody else is hurting. Go away because I'm hurting. Jesus didn't do that. Jesus didn't do that. He welcomed them in because they needed him and he knew that. Okay. It's kind of like more familiar, but not nearly as huge an illustration is when mama's got a cold and the baby needs a diaper changed. Yeah, it's just we just sacrifice our needs because somebody needs us more. And that's compassion. In Matthew 15, people had flocked to Jesus and were listening to Jesus and had been there for 3 days. And he said, you know, they're hungry. He felt compassion for the people who were lingering on his word 3 days. I don't know that they said they'd been 3 days without food. They'd been 3 days there. Had they eaten anything? But he noticed that they were hungry. I don't want to send them away hungry. He had compassion. This is where he fed the 5,000. But he had felt compassion. And the compassion drove him to respond. In something we recently studied on Sunday night, there were two blind men just outside the gates of Jericho. And they heard Jesus coming. They heard the multitude following Jesus. And they knew that was Jesus. And they cried out, Son of David, have mercy. And he stopped. And the crowd were saying, shut up. Shut up to these guys and let's just keep going. And Jesus stopped and had compassion on two blind men and met their needs. You might say that there were a lot of important things going on with this mass of people following him, a lot of people to teach, a lot of people to prepare for leadership, ministry. And here are two blind beggars on the side of the road calling for help. And Jesus didn't get smug and say, you know, I am so busy right now, make an appointment. He stopped what he was doing and he gave them their sight. A widow's son died and they were taking the funeral, the boy on a bier, B-I-E-R, bier, whatever, how we pronounce it, and taking him out for his burial. And Jesus stopped the process and touched the unclean thing, that the carriage, and felt compassion for this widow who'd lost her son and raised him back to life. And over we can see in the life of Jesus illustrations how he was moved with compassion and stopped what he was doing so that he could do what they needed him to do. Now, what they needed was perhaps not as important as what Jesus was doing. But when Jesus stopped to meet their needs, that told me that that was the important thing to do. I desire compassion, not sacrifice. I desire compassion, not going out and doing this noble thing. I desire compassion. And again, I could stop the message right here and have made the point. What I talk about Jesus, I talk about compassion in action. Okay? But he was moved with compassion. Let's look a little bit at some of the things that he did in Mark 1, 40-42, moved with compassion. He healed their sick. In Matthew 14, 13-21, he fed the hungry. In Luke 19, he embraced the outcast. This is the story of Zacchaeus. Who is Zacchaeus? Michael, did you say we are little men? he was a tax collector who was seen as a turncoat, a rebel, a traitor. He was collecting money from his own people to give to the Romans. He was an outcast. But he wanted to see Jesus. He climbed. He was a short guy, short stature. So he climbed up in one of the trees along the path so he could see Jesus when he passed. Jesus said, come on down. I'm going to have dinner with you today. Jesus embraced outcasts. He raised the son of that widow that we just talked about. He raised her back to life. These are some of the things that he did. In Mark 6, when the people gathered to him, this is again the feeding of the 5,000, he felt compassion for them as sheep without a shepherd. So he taught them, I'll be your shepherd. I'll teach you what you need to know about life. I'll cancel my golf tournament so I can teach you. I'll put a hold on these other important things I have going on in my life so I can teach you. He embraced the people with their needs at the point of their needs. That's compassion. That's what he did. In John 8, we read about the woman that was taken in adultery in the very end. They brought her, not the man. He plopped her down in the center of the wherever Jesus was, there in the middle of the people, and made a public spectacle. I don't know how well clothed she was. If she was taken in the very act, you can use your own imagination. I'll not use mine. But you can imagine the humiliation that the minds of the religiously proper people were putting her through. They flopped her right down there in the middle. And Jesus said to those, any one of you who is out without sin, you cast the first stone. Now you can take that two ways, and I think you can take it, should take it both ways. You can take it, are you doing the law accurately? Is this the way that Moses said, take this situation and do it? Or do you have ulterior motives? I.e., in this scenario, are you honestly before God doing it properly? Or are you trying to skewer me? But the other way you can take it, and again, I think you should take it both ways. Which one of you hasn't messed up and tripped up in your life? Now, she's messed up this way. What about you? I think you should take it both ways. Look at yourself. Am I demanding more of other people than I'm willing to give to God myself? And am I taking a law and twisting it to get my advantage? And Jesus said, whichever one of you is without sin in this matter, whichever one of you is without sin, cast the first stone. Who started leaving first?
Older.
The older guys, they knew what Jesus was saying. They saw the power and the pinch of his position. And they knew they were sinners and needed to get out of there. And finally, the woman was left there with Jesus alone. And Jesus said to her, woman, does nobody accuse you? She said, no. He said, neither do I accuse you. Why didn't Jesus accuse her? There's two reasons. Number one, he didn't catch her in the act. He couldn't be a witness against her. Number two, there was a bigger issue than just condemning her for her sin. You know what that bigger issue was? Rescuing her from it. The bigger issue was rescuing her from her sin. So many people get judgmental that they want to stop the process right there and condemn the person in their sin and are not concerned about drawing the person out of their sin. Jesus says, neither do I condemn you. From now on, go and sin no more. But he forgave and encouraged her to walk a better life. I feel compassion for the people. Talk about what he taught. In Luke 10, the story, I've got to stop here. Years ago, when we lived in Indiana, Linda and I met a couple from, was it Sierra Leone? Luke, Alfred. And he challenged me on the idea, people call it the Good Samaritan. The Bible doesn't say he was good, it just says he was a Samaritan, that he was merciful. So I said, you're right, from now on, I'll call him the Merciful Samaritan. And so that, you know, that's where that came from. And Alfred was right. And the Bible doesn't call it Good Samaritan, but the headings at the top do. But he was merciful, the Merciful Samaritan. Why did Jesus teach that story? Who is my neighbor?
Quality that was in
the who is my neighbor was the question, wasn't it? Love your neighbor as yourself is in the law. Well, who is my neighbor? Now, this guy that I really like, this guy that agrees with me religiously, this guy that agrees with me politically, who is my neighbor? So Jesus told the story of the merciful Samaritan, and he asked, which one proved to be neighbor? The one that showed him mercy, right? And so it had nothing to do with ethnicity. It had nothing to do with popularity. It had everything to do with what one four-letter word that starts with N. Need. Had everything to do with that, what that man needed. And you're right, Jim, it is love. But the focal point of mercy is what's needed. What's needed. Not what do I want, or what do I think, or what do I judge about this guy, but what was needed. Jesus said, and we're going to read this one in John 13, verses 33 and 34. Now in John 12 was the triumphal entry. In John 13, Jesus began his last supper. His last supper. Judas got up and walked out during the last supper. And then Jesus had a quiet evening, a private evening with his 12, knowing that he was going to die in the morning. He knew he was going to die before the rooster crowed, or Peter would deny him, and he was going to die in the morning. They'd nail him to the cross. Of course, it'd take about 6 hours up there to die. But you understand what I'm saying. This is the night before Jesus went to the cross. Judas walked out to sell him out. Now, that might have been an opportunity to get really irritated, right? By this ingrate, been keeping the money, been using it on the side for himself. Now he's going to go out and sell out our Lord for more money. It'd be really easy to go into a dark place in that setting. And Jesus said, little children, verse 33, I am with you a little while longer. You will seek me. And as I said to the Jews, where I'm going, you cannot come. Now I say to you also, a new commandment I give you, that you love one another, even as I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this all men will know that you are my disciple. What's a disciple? One who has learned the ways of Jesus. When you love one another, it's proof that you have studied at the feet of Jesus, because here is Judas about to sell him out. And Jesus knows that Judas is going to sell him out. And when Judas came to the garden and kissed him, what did Jesus say? What was the first word out of his mouth? Friend, do you betray the Son of Man with a kiss? Even there, he was trying to win his heart back. Currently thereafter, Judas went out and hanged himself. Jesus was unsuccessful, but he did not use bitterness or anger. He used love in his approach, even to one who would betray him. I'm saying that that's a piece of compassion. That's a piece of compassion. That man was hurting inside. Think about the word compassion. What does it mean? Com means what? With. And passion means the suffering. The suffering. That person is suffering, and I feel it. I identify with the suffering of that person. Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. I identify with the suffering of the other person. I don't take it personally. Taking something personally is going to thwart compassion completely. Jesus said, by this all men will know that you are my disciples if you love, if you have love one for another. People are going to tell you you've been at the feet of Jesus when you treat people the way Jesus did, even when they're hostile to it, even when they are deep in sin, like the woman. Now, there's one place where Jesus, he showed compassion, but it doesn't look like he showed compassion to the individual. He would castigate the spiritual leaders who purposely were twisting God's word and killing God's people. The compassion there was on behalf of the people that were being subverted, not on behalf of the subverters. But even then, Jesus tried to reach them. Let me press on. This is the Lord's Prayer. You probably recognize it. Teach us to pray. Let me go over here, excuse me, go over here and read that with you. Matthew 9. Now, this is, I got the wrong passage down there. I think that's supposed to be chapter 6. Yeah, supposed to be chapter 6, Matthew 6, 9 through 13. Pray then in this way. And look at verse 12. And forgive us our debts as we also have forgiven our debtors. And Jesus said in verse 14, if you forgive men for their transgressions, your heavenly Father will also forgive you. But if you do not forgive men, then your Father will not forgive you your transgressions. The point I think that you can take from this is you're teaching the Father how you view the proper treatment of other people's transgressions. So I'm just not willing to forgive. Well, the Father says, okay, well, that's how you want me to treat you, right? But if you, and What does it mean to forgive? And what's perhaps the most challenging thing you've been ever asked to forgive? I don't want to play the Jeopardy music here, but you know what I'm saying. I don't, maybe you want to give your testimony. Maybe you don't. But what does it mean to forgive, and what's the hardest thing you've ever had to forgive?
Forgive yourself.
Okay, but Jesus said forgive others. But you know, you're right. But somebody who has offended you, I mean, you still live with yourself. You might hate yourself for it, but you still live with yourself. But there are people who do things that you say, I just want to be around them. It's just build a case and shut them out. Yeah, John, Jim?
Forgive the person that killed their grandson. Forgive the person that killed their daughter.
Yeah, Jim's had some challenges there. He's had two of his daughter and his grandson murdered by others. Murdered, cold-blooded murder, rage. I can't call it cold-blooded because it was in a rage at least in one. But still, what do you do with that? I mean, you just want to, you want them to get justice. That's all right for them to get justice. But you hold on to it. What do you do to yourself?
Become bitter.
You become bitter. You become a person not worth being around. Forgiveness is something really you do for yourself. But it's also something that you teach God. You show God. You don't teach him. You show him. This is what I want you to do for me. See, I mean, God puts that one in our lap, doesn't he? If you're willing, if you will forgive, I will forgive. If you hold on to the hurt, I'll hold on to the offense. You're just showing me how you want me to treat you. But it's compassion that brings us to the point of being willing to forgive. Okay. And so this is what I wanted to show you, that the compassion of Jesus has spawned a legacy in humankind. And it should spawn something in us. Did you know that hospitals were because of the compassion of Christians toward the suffering? And check it out. The hospitals came, the concept of a hospital came into existence because of Christians wanting help. And other, I can't even say the word, and if I said it, it wouldn't mean anything. Little missionary societies, mercy showing comes from the Greek word for mercy. You know? But food and clothing banks abound. I don't know that they abound in Muslim countries. I don't know that they do, but they abound among Christians, don't they? This is compassion at work. Okay, this is the legacy of Jesus. This is what he planted among humankind, and what we emulate in ways. Our work with homelessness. Think about it. What are we going to do right after services, Jim? Pack some blessing bags and maybe some backpacks. I mean, we have distributed up to 30, over 30 backpacks so far. And we just have, we've had one Thursday in November. So in five, so that's averaging about six plus a week. And not to the same people. But our work with homelessness, we got the ray of hope, we got the blessing bags, we got the backpacks. Okay. Now, I want you to take this. This is what we're doing as a group. And we enjoy doing it. And we got pictures. You can see some pictures up on our website of us packing stuff. And I don't know if we have pictures of some of the homeless people coming and picking up their backpacks, but they don't just walk in, pick a backpack, and walk out, do they? They're generally here for about an hour, visiting, having snacks, talking life, talking about Jesus. I mean, it's a real, we're providing nutrients and protection against the weather, but we're also feeding their soul at the same time. Okay. So you need to get some pictures of that too, right? Right. And so, but I'm glad that that's something that we do as a group, right? My intent in all of that is to prime the pump. Is that a good word? I don't know that we use that word anymore. My grandpa, I remember in the kitchen, there was one of these in the kitchen. It's one of these. And sometimes you had to have a bucket of water to pour down the shaft to get enough suction to get the pump working. That's priming the pump. Okay. I'm hoping that what we're doing as a group is getting the juices flowing so that it turns up in your heart, the legacy of Jesus in your heart, as it, that is your heart, sees the need. And it might be a physical need, like providing food, providing covering, providing transportation, or changing a tire, you know, physical needs. It might be emotionally, a shoulder to cry on, some words of comfort, some words of hope. It might be spiritual need. It should always lead to that, because ultimately, everybody needs Jesus. Everybody needs Jesus. Life will be better if they have Jesus, and the afterlife will certainly be better. So there is a need there. And let your heart be attuned to that need. That's compassion. Being attuned to the needs and the people that you meet, whether it's their physical need, their emotional need, but especially their spiritual needs. Okay? So I want us to study his actions, study his teachings, embody his compassion, both for those suffering, for those marginalized, for those in need, and through gracious forgiveness and without judgment. Without, James said in chapter 4, there is one lawgiver and judge, and it ain't me. I am not the judge of anybody. I am the purveyor of God's compassion. That's all I am. He didn't call upon me to make moral judgments about another person's acceptability, about another person's doctrinal position as far as it being acceptable. He called upon me to love them like Jesus did, and with compassion serve them. Do I think that maybe they need to change their spiritual views? Sure. But I'm not going to judge them. I'm just going to lead them. Okay. Let them decide whether they, what they want to, without judgment. And so I don't have it in the notes, and but I can't get away from Isaiah. It might be the most magnificent book in the entire Bible, other than but in Isaiah 42, there's a passage that's quoted in the New Testament. Isaiah 42, in verse 3, he says, a bruised reed he will not break, a dimly burning wick he will not extinguish. And this passage is quoted in Matthew 12. I knew we were going to Matthew 12 at some point in time. Matthew 12. Verse 1, I think. No, I got that wrong. Verse 20. Okay. No, it's not 12:20. I'm 13:20. No wonder. I'm going to start in verse 15. Jesus is aware. That is, that the Pharisees wanted to grab him and destroy him. Jesus, aware, withdrew from there, and many followed, and he healed them all. And he warned them not to make him known, in order that what was spoken through Isaiah the prophet might be fulfilled. Behold, my servant, whom I have chosen, my beloved, in whom my soul is pleased, well pleased. I will put my spirit upon him, and he shall proclaim justice to the Gentiles. He will not quarrel, nor cry out, nor will anyone hear his voice in the streets. A battered reed he will not break off, and a smoldering wick he will not put out until he leads justice to victory, and in his name the Gentiles will hope. What was it like being Jesus? He was not there to crush anybody, even the ones that we might look at a broken reed. Well, that can't grow. Not if you're Jesus, it can't. I mean, if I don't know what I'm trying to say is, you say it can't grow, but if you're Jesus, that thing can grow. A smoldering wick he won't put out, because there could be a fire burning in that person's soul if you just fan the flames a little bit. If you just protect it from the wind, do what you can to build it up and lift it up. And so how Jesus treated people is an example for me. He is compassionate. Let me be full of the compassion of Jesus. I hope you feel challenged. I hope you feel challenged. Not smug, I'm doing it all right, but challenged to, as Paul said to the Philippians, to excel still more. Compassion is great, but let it infuse your life. If we said that compassion is the essence of the character of Jesus, and we said, I am a disciple of Jesus, the conclusion will be, compassion will be the essence of my life too. Would you say that about yourself as we stand and sing together?